Welcome back. Unfortunately, no burgers.
No burgers.
Still tasty food nonetheless. That is John Galloway. I am Chris Harrison. Christopher Harrison, even. I do prefer Christopher, but in any event. And this is Intro to ASP.NET MVC. Over our meal break, and again, it was our lunch, you should have seen John here. He was furiously typing away, trying to answer every single question that we had in there, and actually managed to do a pretty decent job, I got to say.
There were quite a few.
Yeah, there were quite a few. It's been very interesting kind of watching the number of people that that are connected. It's a pretty crazy number of people that are there. So we're doing our absolute best to get through every question that that we can. So we apologize here if we're not able to get to your question. But John does want to go over a couple of little questions.
Well, I wanted to mention some questions came up quite a bit. And so I just wanted to make sure, if we can go to my screen here, I'll point out a few of them. So one is that the source code, we've got AKAMS, MVA, MVC source, and this will just take you over to GitHub.
Yep.
So this is where we're publishing the source during the day. So we have, in the root of the project, we have the main thing that we're working on, and then we're saving snapshots to the different folders at the end of each chapter.
Yeah, right now, everything's in that main one. The module folders are there, and we'll get
there. Actually module 2 and 3.
Module 2 and 3 are look at you.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, I've been busy. okay.
I was just eating during lunch.
Okay, so we also have, so many people are asking what these monitors are. This is a Planar PCT2785. So that's that. The other thing was I kept messing up. I couldn't figure out how to run multiple browsers in Visual Studio, and that was the standard toolbar. So I went in and I did standard toolbar like everyone kept telling me. And what that lets me do is I can run with multiple browsers at once, or I can browse, I would say, like now I'd like to run in Chrome, but I can also say, I want to set, you know, both Chrome and IE, and let's launch them both. And it'll launch the site at the same time in two different browsers. You can see here I haven't started this up yet. Thanks a lot, Chrome. Okay. Anyhow, that's what would have happened. There we go. There's this. And now Browser Link is connected to all these different browsers at the same time. Edit one, they update all.
Yeah, and one real quick little thing about Browser Link that's extremely cool, just to highlight it real quickly, is if you've got multiple monitors, that's where I really love that, because then you can be working on your view in one spot, have your browsers up in a couple of other monitors, and then all you have to do is just keep hitting that little button, and then poof, it's now back up to date and back up to date and back up to date. And, you know, when you're tweaking around things with views and CSS, that's what you're constantly having to do is, you know, how does it look inside of IE? How does it look inside of Chrome? How does it look inside of, you know, for the 7 people using Opera?
Yeah.
Sorry. Sorry.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. I was exaggerating. 6 people. Yeah. Anyway, moving on. Poor Opera. But anyway, were there other questions?
There are a few real quick
ones.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So here is on GitHub on my screen here. So I've saved off module 2. You know, we've got the source at the end of module 2, and we've got the source at the end of module 3, and then the root is in the root of the project. So this should work for you if you grab this, if you have Visual Studio. And here's how you get Visual Studio. Go to visualstudio.com and click on downloads.
Yep.
You can either get a 90-day trial of Ultimate, or you can go down to Express and get Express for web.
Yep.
So that's that. Let me see. For more advanced questions, I've been pointing people to our MVC4 application Jumpstart, and that's built off the exam preparation material, so it's it's more in more depth and covering things like repositories and view models and things in more detail.
Exactly, and if you're looking for our inside jokes on spaghetti,
yes,
watch that, then that will explain everything.
Yep, okay, so another question was, how do I get this, how many references and all that kind of neat stuff on top? So that is a feature called Code Lens, and Code Lens is in Visual Studio Ultimate, and it brings up that thing where you can mouse over and it'll show them.
It is so cool.
It's really slick. I've actually got it turned off on mine because at home I was taking screenshots, and Visual Studio synchronizes your settings, and so when I loaded up Visual Studio here, it brought that over, and Code Lens is disabled.
Okay.
That is another cool feature of Visual Studio. It is. Those settings.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay, I'm going fast here. Somebody else is a PHP developer and is new to ASP.NET and .NET in general. I recommend the C# for Absolute Beginners course on MVA. So
Yep.
If, you know, we're covering a lot of material today. If you are a web dev and new to .NET, this is going to make that C# code make more sense.
Yep.
We have been synchronizing stuff with Git. Now, I learned Git using the command line, but there's great Visual Studio integration for Git. So in the Team Explorer, we actually have, you know, this is the source code as we're checking it in, and I can look for unsynced commits, and I can say sync, and I'm, you know, pulling and pushing code. We've been committing stuff, everything using the Git integration for Visual Studio.
Yep.
So that is nice. We did talk about using branches to separate out the different modules. We thought we might blow a few minds with that, so we're keeping it simple.
Well, and not only that, again, you know, we're doing things live here, and you try to keep the number of moving parts to a bare minimum, just to try and avoid problems. And again, as you've seen, there's still no guarantee.
Right. We had one other question on code-first migrations and how I can learn more about those migrations. We don't have time to dig into that in detail today. So this is this information on MSDN. If you search for code-first migrations on MSDN, there's this thing, and it walks you all the way through customizing, running through them, using multiple models, et cetera. So a lot of great information there.
Right.
So we really do appreciate your questions. Please keep bringing them in. I just wanted a chance to answer some of the most common ones.
Yep, absolutely.
Let's hop to you.
Yes, let's do that. So up until now, in a lot of ways, we've sort of just taken things for granted. Hey, cool, look, it's magic. And that's basically what we've done with a lot of the Visual Studio tooling. Well, now what we want to do is dig a little bit deeper, because don't get me wrong, what you're going to be able to do right out of the box with Visual Studio, with just a couple of little right clicks, and poof, we've got a whole bunch of stuff automatically created for us. At some point, you are going to need to tweak things. You are going to need to add in additional ways for people to interact with things. So for example, you might be looking to allow for editing. Well, you might have both an advanced editor and a simple editor. Or maybe for displaying data. And with our little music store example, maybe we want to be able to go in and display all albums for a particular artist or display all reviews for a particular album. So we need to add in additional functionality, and all of that is going to be done by utilizing actions and controllers. So that's what we want to take a look at here in this module, is how to go in and customize our controllers, or if you don't mind the pun, to take control of our controllers. You see what I did there? Uh-huh. I'm here all week. In any event, so what we're going to start off with is how to add a brand new action into a controller. We'll talk a little bit about model binding, which we've sort of hinted at, but how all the data from the form is automatically going to be converted into the classes and objects behind the scenes that the action is going to use. We'll talk a little bit about filters and how they're going to tweak the behavior of different actions. We'll talk a bit about vanity URLs and routing and how it is that /reviews and /albums automatically worked for us. And then we're going to close it all off taking a look at best practices for our controllers. So one of the things that we've been trying as much as possible to do is to try and point everybody in the right direction. And since this is your first experience, hey, if we can kind of show off these are good ways to go in and design things, that's obviously going to help you going forward. So we'll close off with all of that. But let's start off by taking a look at how to add an action to a controller. Now, in the second module, where we talked about models, one of the biggest points that I made is the fact that a model, at the end of the day, is a class. That's it. It's just a class. Well, in continuing that theme, hey, John, guess what a controller is?
Class.
Hey, it's a class. That's it. So when it comes to adding in our own custom actions, all that we're going to do is add a method to a class. Because at the end of the day, a controller is a class, and an action is a method. That's really it. So if you know how to create a class, and you know how to add a method to a class, congratulations, you know how to create an action. It really is that simple. Now, that being said, there's obviously a little bit we need to cover. I mean, it's not just simply, hey, well, there you go. There's our module, and let's move on. there's obviously a little bit more that we need to talk about. And the first big thing is, if we are going to create these methods, what's the signature going to look like? And I actually want to go in reverse order here. That I want to start at the very bottom and take a look at the parameters. And parameters, of course, are going to be whatever it is that we're going to pass in to that particular method, whatever it is that we're going to pass in. Well, our parameters in MVC are just like normal parameters. So when I go into fire up Visual Studio here in a few minutes and we take a look at our signature, what you're going to notice is that it's just a normal method. So if you remember back to an earlier demo that I did when I highlighted, I believe it was review, and I showed the fact that, hey, look, we've got this little action, it's just taking in review. All of that is being done because of the fact that we have a basic parameter that's being passed in. So again, if you know how to add a method, congratulations, you know how to add on an action. Now, the other side is not only just what are we going to pass in, but what's the return type going to be? What is it that we're going to send back out the door? And you'll notice that in MVC, typically, the return type is going to be action result or something that inherits from action result. Now, if I were to get technical here, I would mention that the return type can actually be almost anything. Mm-hmm. And MVC does a decent job of taking whatever it is that you've done and basically balling it up and sending it out. That's not a behavior you want to depend on.
Right.
That really it is action result. Now, when you return something back, you want to return something back that is either action result or something that inherits from action result. And so you'll notice, for example, that we have the ability to send down files. So let's say that we were creating an application where we were going to be storing images inside of a database. And I wanted to be able to programmatically send those out. I can return a file by using a file result. Or a couple of people have asked, hey, what about videos? Well, if we were storing that inside of a database, and again, we wanted to send that out, then I can return back a file result for that. Well, how about maybe sending down some JavaScript or maybe sending down a JSON object? Well, you're going to notice, sure enough, we've got specifically a JSON result that we could send out as well. And then finally, last but not least, is view result. And this is the biggest one, because view result is typically what you're going to be sending back, because view result is going to be, wait for it, a view. And 9 times out of 10, if not more often, that's what you're looking to send back, is you're looking to send back some form of a view. Mm-hmm. Now, that's how the method signature is going to look. Now, a couple of people asked this in the chat window, and I'm now going to highlight it right now, is those little attributes that you might have seen that said HTTP get an HTTP post. And what in the world are all of those about? Well, get and post, for those of you that are not familiar with HTTP, are a little thing known as methods or verbs. And it's simply a way of sending a signal from the client to the server. And I don't want to get overly technical here, but the biggest difference between get and post is header information. And header information is going to be sent behind the scenes, and that allows you to send large amounts or complex data. So large amounts of data or complex data. So get is typically used to make a request of saying, hey, look, I want the edit page for this product, or I want a create screen for this order. And post is what's going to be used to send that information up. So if I've got a create screen, I'm going to have some information that I'm eventually going to need to send up to the server. That's going to go up via post. So coming back to my slide here real quick, let's just kind of think about, I hate it when I do that, erase all link and highlight it. There we go. Let's think for a second about a create and an update. These are actually two-step operations. Step one is present the form. Hey, this is the information that we want. Step two is accept the input. And that's where the user will send it back. And one very big change for people who've been doing web forms is that while, yes, these two steps still existed with web forms, it was just that they were done inside of one ASPX page. Because what you would do is you would create the form, and then you drag out the button, you double click on the button, and set up your event handler. And what would happen is somebody would go to new.aspx, and it would just simply display the form. And then they would fill it out and they would click on the button. And at that point, it would then execute the code that was behind that button. So it was still two steps. It was just done in one page. Mm-hmm. With MVC, that's not going to be the case, that for each step that we're going to have, we are going to need a brand new action. And what we need to tell MVC is how the user is going to eventually call this. So again, it's going to be get, here's your form, and then post, and that's actually going to accept all the input from the user. And so that's going to be your typical pattern there, is you're going to present your form using get, and then you're going to accept your data by utilizing post. And let's go in and take a look at doing this here. So let me get out of PowerPoint and bring back up Visual Studio, and let me just do this real quick. Okay, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to open up the albums controller here. And album, if you remember from before, and this is sort of where we left it, is we made it very simple, is that we've got our album ID, we've got our title. There is artist right here. And for simplicity's sake, I'm going to comment out artist, just try and keep it a little bit simpler. So I'm just going to comment that out. So all that we've got is just title. That's it. Nothing else. We just have title. Boy, if this thing breaks on my database, I'm going to be really upset. You know what? I'm going to undo that. I'm just going to leave it the way it is. I'm just getting nervous now. Okay, I just want things to
work. Don't make it angry.
Yeah, exactly. You wouldn't like it when it's angry. In any event, here's what I want to highlight, is this was created by that default scaffolding. And so you'll notice that we've got index, and that's where we're going to display all items. And we've got details, and that's going to display just one item. Now, the code that's inside of here is using Code First Entity Framework. And a couple of real quick things that I want to highlight here. Number one is, again, don't focus too much on the actual code here, because, again, your mileage may vary. Number two, because I know that there's somebody that's out there that's looking at this and going, that's terrible design. And I'm going to let you in on a little secret. You're kind of right. And the reason that that's bad design, and we'll talk about this a bit more at the end of the module, is that I've got an awful lot of database code that's inside of here. And as a result, if I'm looking to try and test things, if I'm looking to try and make changes later on, this is not going to lend itself really well to that. So it's there, but I really want to avoid trying to do things this way. It's nice if you just need something quick and dirty, but if you truly are looking for an enterprise application, that's probably not the way that we want to go in and do things. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, the main thing that I want to highlight is right here. Whoops, and I had made a couple of real quick changes just to try and make my life a little easier, but I'm now going to change it back because this is actually the way that I want it for right now. Album. Okay. In any event, so here's what I want you to notice is right here is we've got create, and right here is we've got create. And these are those two steps that I was talking about, where this top one right here, this is going to be the one to display the form. And then the second one right here, this is going to be the one to accept the input. So that's the difference between these two, is that the top one is going to display the form, the bottom one is going to accept the input. The other big thing that I want to highlight is you'll notice the HTTP post here. That post, again, is going to say the only way to call this is by posting data. You'll notice that there's nothing above create. By default, it's get. So let me just add in a couple of real quick comments here. This way you have it for later. Automatically. Uses get. This displays user. There we go. And then down below is that this is going to accepts the input from the user. Beautiful.
Yep.
Just like that. Okay. So those are the two little moving parts there. And if I wanted to create my own action here, then all that I would have to do is just simply say public action result, and then give it a name, display by artist, for example, and maybe int, and we'll say artist ID, and then we'll go ahead and imagine code here. There we go. And then we'll go ahead and say return view. All right. So the big point that I want to make here is, again, it's just all about adding a method in. Now, the other thing that I want to highlight is you'll notice this little return view right here. View is a helper method. Let's look at our controller here real quick. You'll notice right up at the very top, albums controller. And you'll notice that it inherits from controller. Well, controller has an awful lot of built-in little helper methods, helper functions that help make all the magic work. And one of them is this little view method here. And what view method is going to be looking for is the name of the view, potentially, optionally, and in particular, it's going to be looking for the data that the view needs. That if you remember all the way back to the beginning of the course, one of the big things that we talked about was the different moving parts that MVC has, that we've got the model, the view, the controller. And if you remember, John actually did a very good job of displaying out the different moving parts. That the request comes in to the controller's then going to go off and do stuff.
Right.
And it's going to, typically from a database, but doesn't necessarily have to be, but it's typically going to retrieve a model. And then that model is going to be combined with our view, and then that's going to be sent back out the door. So there's the different moving parts. And now you can sort of see all of that in action. Mm-hmm. Is that here is our controller, so the request is going to come in to display by artist, or the request is going to come in to index. We're then going to go off to the database here, and we're going to go grab some data. That's going to be the model. And, you know, let's even go one step further here. Let's maybe say var albums equals db albums to list. There we go. And albums. There we go. So now you can sort of see that a little bit better. That this top part right here is, hey, let's get the model. And then part two, combine the model with the view and return. Now, the last part here that I want to mention, and I'm going to try to do this at a relatively high level, just because I don't want to dig too deep into it, because it does start to go a little bit beyond the scope of the course. But you are going to notice right here that little call, that little code. And you might be wondering, well, what in the world is going on there? That is Entity Framework. And that is our little database context. So what we're actually doing is we're saying, quite simply, give me all the albums and then convert them to a .NET list. So the first item right here is all my albums. That right there is saying convert them to a list. Mm-hmm. And that's just being done through Code First Entity Framework. Cool. All right, let me go back to my old slide here. There we go. And let me bring this back up here. And actually, I'm going to be totally unprofessional for about 30 seconds here. Do me a favor, put a camera on John. Thank you.
Okay.
We're just delaying here so Christopher can get a drink.
Well, let me see. Anyone know a joke?
No. Okay. Well delayed. Okay. Now then, much better. Let's go ahead. Sorry that, you know, it's one of those things, you start talking an awful lot and yeah, you just need water.
I'll have a dance ready for next time.
Excellent. I'm going to hold you to that. A little Macarena. In any event, let's go ahead and talk a bit about model binding. So one of the things that I'm going to demonstrate here in just a couple of moments is that little form and how, in fact, it will save data behind the scenes. Well, the question is, well, how does that work? Because if you remember back to our action was accepting a parameter. Our action is going to accept an album parameter. Mm-hmm. Well, exactly how does that all come together? How does that work? Well, I think John put it best, and this was something that I picked up from him when we did our 486 MVC. It just works. That's it. It's that simple. It just works. Mm-hmm. Now, the way that it works is by utilizing a little thing known as the default model binder. And before I dig too deeply into this, I do want to mention that if MVC ever does something that you don't like, you always have the ability to customize it. But keep in mind that just because you have the ability to do something doesn't necessarily mean that you should.
Yeah.
Because that default model binder, again, as John put it, mm-hmm. it just works. So if you depend on that, if you lean on that, that will work for most every scenario that you're ever going to come across. That in all my time of doing MVC, and maybe you've had a different experience, but in all my time of doing MVC, ModelBinder in particular, I've never needed to go in and create my own custom model binder. I've created my own custom control factory a couple of times, mm-hmm. but I've never created my own custom model binder.
You know, that's a really key point, and I've talked to people, you know, some, especially like a big development team, and they're very opinionated, and they're like, well, I want, you know, my views to have this, you know, to come from this other directory, and I want to do this. And you can do that, like you're saying, you can customize everything, mm-hmm. but then you take on some more work, right? You now, because you're customizing things, now you need to make sure that's going to work with future versions. You've got to make sure that new developers on your team learn your crazy conventions.
Exactly.
My first web or MVC application, we did tons of custom routes because we're like, well, you know, sure, there's controller action ID, but I want to do this, 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 and this. We ended up with like 50 different routes. And then after a while, you're troubleshooting why isn't this route picking up? Oh, because this one got it. So I do very much recommend, as Christopher's saying, the model binder really does work pretty well. And instead of just going in and saying, well, this is clearly wrong, instead try and understand, you know, try and work with it. Give it a little more
right.
time.
Yeah, exactly.
And the whole point, what you were saying about the it just works, I think some of the magic that makes that work is that MVC is both displaying the edit or create views and it's accepting the input.
Yep.
So since it's handling the display and receiving the results, it's kind of similar to a web forms control that can display in an edit and a display mode.
Yeah.
This is kind of like edit display mode because it's doing that. When it outputs, it scaffolded the forms for you, so it knows the names of all those controls,
yep.
and it's able to read out of that HTML form and pop that information right back in.
Exactly. Yep, that's exactly it. Yeah. So if we bring it back down to my slide here real quick, what you're going to notice is this is the way that the model binder works. In particular, it's going to look for the name attribute of input elements. That one of the things that you might be wondering is name and ID in HTML. Name is what's used when it goes from the client up to the server. ID is what's going to be used for client-side scripting. And what's nice about having that separation is that it does give you the ability to maybe potentially better tweak things when you're doing your JavaScript. So if MVC needs one name and you need something different for your JavaScript, you've got that flexibility. Now, by default, you're going to notice that MVC will make the ID and the name basically match one another. But if you need the ability to control the ID or do anything like that, then you've got that that capability. Mm-hmm. Now, when it comes to a basic class, so let's say, for example, that we've got song here, and I'm going to create a form for song. Well, for title, it's simply going to be name equals title. And for length, it's simply going to be name equals length. And for lyrics, it's simply going to be name equals lyrics. Well, what happens if maybe on the exact same form, I wanted to be able to edit the album as well? So let's take, for example, the liner notes. How would we be able to, on the exact same form, edit the liner notes? How do we get from song to album and then album into liner notes? Well, the answer is simply dotted notation. Simply album dot liner notes. And the default model binder, again, just automatically makes all of that happen. Now, that's the good side. But there is one little downside here. There is one possible little bad thing. So imagine, if you will, the following model. So we've got song ID, title, length, and lyrics. Well, when it comes to lyrics, typically that's going to be something that's going to be relatively long. That's going to be something that's going to require a particular set of formatting. And we probably want a form specifically for lyrics. So what I'm going to be looking for is I'm going to be looking for a form where I'm going to ask you for the title, I'm going to ask you for the length, but I'm not going to ask you for the lyrics. Okay, that makes sense. That works, right? Well, here's the problem. The default model binder can be a little bit too flexible. That the default model binder, while yes, it is going to look for names inside of our post, it's not necessarily going to be able to figure out whether or not all of those input controls were actually on the form. And so one of the possible bad things that could happen is somebody could, with a little bit of JavaScript, or maybe just add that into the query string, they could potentially send up the lyrics even though we weren't necessarily looking for it. Mm-hmm. So the challenge is that that default model binder is automatically going to bind every single property for us regardless of whether or not we're actually using it. Mm-hmm. So fortunately, we've got,
This actually has been, some sites have been hacked with this in the past. An example is GitHub. They actually had somebody went in, GitHub is built with Ruby on Rails, but it has a similar binding system. And someone using a linked, because it follows foreign keys, the model binder actually follows mm-hmm. foreign keys. And so they said, okay, well, I'm going to just turn on this .isAdmin. And somebody basically made themselves an admin that way. You could also, let's say you had a price field. What if somebody is posting an order and they also just passed in the price?
Yep.
Well, and you may, your song or your album, or et cetera, may have a price field on there.
Right.
You don't want people telling you this is the price, you know, name your price day, right? And so, so
probably wouldn't be in business for very long.
So that's exactly why what Christopher is pointing out now is incredibly important. You want to control what's being passed in to the binder.
Exactly. Yep. Now, as it turns out, there's a couple of different ways that we can handle this. And the simplest way to do this is by utilizing the bind attribute. So if you go in and take a look at the controller that's automatically generated for you, you'll notice that it will automatically add in those bind attributes for you. Now, the nice part about that is it's simple. There's no other changes that I need to make. The problem, however, is what would happen if later on I went back and I added on another attribute to song? Well, now what I'd have to do is I would then have to go back and update that list again. And you know, I've got better things to do with my time. Madman's going to be coming back on the air, you know? I've got other things to do. So that's really not a great way to go about doing things. It's nice, it's simple, but if you truly are concerned about doing things like that, it is possible to create a custom binder, but let's just cross that out there. I put that on there for full disclosure. Yes, it's technically possible. But really a better way to do things, if you truly do need to limit things, is to create a view model. Because after all, if I just went in and I created a brand new song class here, and again, I'm just going to go with a real quick basic UML. So if I just created a brand new song class here, and I just added on song ID, title, and length, and that was all that I put onto there, well, these are now the only three pieces of information that you could send up to me. The problem, however, with creating a view model is that while, yes, it does solve this problem, it can add to a little bit more complexity because now you've got yet another moving part. So again, this is the simplest way to do it. It's not necessarily going to scale the best, but it is the simplest way to do it. The other solution is, again, to go in and create a view model there. Okay, so with that, let's go in and do a little bit of demoing here. And let me get out of that and do. Okay, so let's go in, and I really want to do two things with my demo here. Number one is I do want to highlight that little bind attribute just so we can kind of go in and see that. But also number two is I want to show off a little bit of that binder automatically. So first things first is let me... And by the way, this right here, that brand new enhanced scroll bar, that is brand new, again, with 2013. And I really love this, just because it allows me to very quickly find the spot that I'm looking for. And in particular, what I'm looking for is the edit screen, because this is the one that I didn't modify. And so if I click on that right there, there we go, that will take me right to there. And by the way, that's under Tools, Options. Then let's see if I can find it fast enough.
It's search scroll bar at the top.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, I know it's scroll bar.
Yeah.
Scroll bar. There we go. Yep. Editor all languages scroll
Isn't
bar.
That magical. I love that.
It's
search.
It's wonderful. Yeah. And then you'll notice right there, it's map mode is the option that you're looking for there. Mm-hmm. So pretty cool. Okay. In any event, there's the little edit. This is what was automatically created for it. And you'll notice there's the include with album ID and title. So those are the only two properties that would be settable on album here. So if I did go back to album, and I'm not going to save it this way, because again, I'm not going to tempt fate, but let's say I added in prop and I said, let's leave it as integer, and maybe number of songs, for example.
Yep.
Let's say I added that in. Well, now, if I go in and I do a build here, you're going to notice, let me come back over here, that it didn't pick that up. So that, again, is that one little problem with that bind attribute, is that if you class changes, this is not automatically going to reflect that.
Right.
So, yeah, a little bit of a problem there. Okay. In any event, let's go ahead and get rid of that. I'm nervous. All right. The other big thing that I want to highlight here is this. Let me go back to my create, and I'm going to comment out this block of code. By the way, two-part keystroke, control K is in kilo, control C is in Charlie, or comment, and that will comment out a block of code, or control K, control U to uncomment. It is also available on the little toolbar buttons as well, but I sort of like doing it like that. But in any event, let me just go ahead and comment all of this out. And I'm going to change this from album to be form control. Or form context, is that what I want? I think that's what I want. Okay. In any event, let me leave in the breakpoint there. And let me go to albums create. Trigger, 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 trigger. There we go. And let's add in title, and we'll say disintegration.
Good album.
A great album. Again, I'm really just kind of proving my age here. And let's go ahead and hit create. And now here's what I want you to notice about, see, I knew I was wrong when I did it. And I want, see, never doubt yourself. When I typed it out, I knew it was wrong. Let's do a form collection. There we go. Take two. Chugga, 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 chugga. And let's go into albums create. Take two. There we go. And now one more time. Disintegration. Disintegration. There we go. And let's go ahead. You know what else I'm going to do real quick? Let me just zoom in, make it a little bit bigger. Perfect. And let's go ahead and hit create. And now here's what I want you to notice, is that there is my little form collection. And if I dig into this, and I actually had it from before, so let me just one more time, album, and let's go ahead and say title, like that, and hit enter. What you're going to notice is down here at the very bottom is that it now displays out disintegration, because it's automatically being passed up.
Yeah.
Now, let's stop the debugger real quick here and kind of show this now with the model binder. Is let's go ahead and uncomment that. Let's change this to be album. And now let's go ahead and set my breakpoint and launch it one more time. F5. Two things to mention here, albums create. Two things to mention here. Number one, trigger, 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 trigger. There we go. View source. And largest, let's go in, scroll on down, and there is my little title. And you'll notice that my name is title as promised. So again, that default model binder,
right?
That's how it's doing it. And then you'll notice again, if I go in and I type in disintegration again, and then hit create, you'll notice that it is now constructed my little album here. And I can now see, let me just zoom in there real quick. You know what, I'll do it this way. Thank you. Let's do it just down here. You're going to notice, sure enough, that it's automatically set up the title to be disintegration.
Yep.
And there you have it. And I have to say, despite the fact that Friday I'm in Love is on it, I much prefer Wish over Disintegration. Disintegration is an amazing album, but I do like Wish that much better. Okay. In any event, let me go back to my slides here. Okay. Beautiful. Okay. Now, when we're talking about creating actions and creating controllers, one of the biggest things that we want to try and do is make our controllers and our actions dumb. They don't need to know about all the surrounding nonsense that makes all the behind-the-scenes magic work. That really all that they need to know is, oh, well, I go over there to go get a model, I combine that with a view and send it out the door. And there's a lot of reasons for that, not the least of which is simply trying to make things more modular. So let's say, for example, that we wanted to set up a system where you were only allowed to edit albums that you had created. Now, could I put that code inside of my actions? Sure. But here's the problem, is that at a bare minimum, I'm going to need it in two actions. I'm going to need it in the action that is displaying out the data, and I'm going to need it in the action that's actually taking the input. So there's going to be two places where I would need that. And that's not to then count maybe other possible scenarios, forms, or otherwise, where I'm going to allow you to edit an album. So rather than going off and adding that code into every single action, we want to put that off somewhere else. And in MVC, that somewhere else happens to be a little thing known as a filter. Now, filters are basically, not even basically, they are attributes. And if you remember the concept of an attribute is going to decorate something. So in this particular case, it's going to decorate a controller or an action, or both. And the whole goal here is to alter the execution. And MVC is going to have a whole bunch of built-in filters that we can use. So, for example, one of the things that we can do with filters is we can set up security. Now, for those of you that are doing web forms and you're looking at MVC, you might be thinking, well, wait a minute, I'm just going to go update the web doc config, which works perfectly in web forms. And the reason that it works perfectly in web forms is because when I go to www.whatever.com/something.aspx, it's always going to be called something.aspx. We're going to a specific page. That's not what's happening here. Mm-hmm. Here, what we're doing is we're calling a method on a controller, and how that's going to be wired up is based on a routing mechanism. We'll actually get into routing in a couple of minutes. But long story short, what could very easily happen is that the URL could change. And so as a result, because of the fact that the URL could change, whatever we put into the web.config could be obsolete tomorrow. So by decorating the action with an attribute, regardless of what happens to that action, regardless of where it's moved to, as long as we keep the attribute on top of it, then we know that it will always work. Now, to kind of break this down a little bit, let's talk a little bit about kind of normal execution here. So there's my little user, and my little user makes a request. And that request is then going to cause the controller to be instantiated. It's then going to run the action. It's then going to load up the model, combine that with the view, and send that out the door. That's the normal operation. What filters are going to do is they're going to inject in a little bit of code, potentially to the beginning and to the end of that action being executed. And in fact, this could even short-circuit things. So maybe in the case of security, that we need to reroute somebody to a login page. We could figure that out right here. Or maybe down below, if we needed to go in and do some logging. So let's say that I want to log every single time that somebody creates a brand new album, then I could do that by setting up, again, a filter. Now, I mentioned that MVC has a bunch of filters that are added in, that are created, and you can decorate that on top of an action, a controller, or if you want to make it global, you'll notice there's a little filter config that you could add in those actions into. Now, a couple that are worth highlighting. Number one, authorize. That's going to be going in to set up security. Yep. So you'll notice that you could choose that a user has to be a member or a particular user or a member of a particular role. We also have this little thing called an anti-forgery token. And what that's going to do is give us the ability to make sure that a form hasn't been sent from a different page. And there's actually two parts there, that a token needs to be added into a view, and then it needs to be checked on the action. And fortunately, the built-in scaffolding automatically does that for us. And then finally, last but not least, is this big one called require HTTPS, which is all about SSL. Now, I'm staring at my clock here, and my clock is telling me I'm starting to run out of time. That being said, and it was funny, John and I actually got together for dinner last night to kind of go back over all of this. And I did, in fact, say to him at dinner, you know, we got to be very careful about this because I could very easily talk for hours about the importance of SSL. So we're going to have to kind of see and depend on how much time we've got here. So since we don't have a whole lot of time, I'm going to do the short version. Enable SSL. Done.
Yeah.
No questions asked. When in doubt, enable SSL. If you're going to create any form of a page that's going to require user authentication, enable SSL. Now, if you've never been over to Coding Horse site, this is one of those blogs that I recommend everybody keep an eye on. I am going to warn you, every now and then there's a little bit of adult language on there. But all of that aside, he's got some great blog posts on there. And this one in particular is a must read by all web developers, I think, because it hits the two biggest things that people sort of forget or don't think about when it comes to SSL. Number one is they start getting concerned about the cost of a certificate. Mm-hmm. It's not that expensive. And number two is they get concerned about the performance. It's not that big of an impact on performance. So if you are going to set up any form of an app that's going to be asking users to log in, just enable SSL and do it right from the get-go. All right. Now, all of that being said, let's go in and kind of real quick here highlight how filters work. And what I'm going to do is this. Let me bring back up Visual Studio, and let's just go into my create. So what I want to do with create here is let's just say we want you to log on. All I have to do is to simply say authorize.
Yep.
And authorize simply means that you have to have logged on.
Now, one really important thing about what you just did there was you put this on a controller action, not the entire controller.
Correct. Now, but I could put it on the entire controller if I wanted to.
Great. Okay. So this allows you at a granular level to say only this specific controller action requires authentication. All the rest of it's open.
And that's exactly it. That's exactly it. So now, if I go back to, or I could also, by the way, if I wanted to, and yes, I'm going to hit this terrible joke. If I wanted to go in, maybe add in a role and say, for example, roles equals dinner. See, because it's a dinner role.
I'm with you.
All right.
We just finished lunch.
Yeah, exactly. But in any event, it's such a bad
now, some
joke.
People might use administrator or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, your real world would be administrators. Your bad joke is that. But anyway, let's go back into albums and create. And now what you're going to notice here is that I went back to that exact same URL that I've been trying to go to, that album/create. And you'll notice that it automatically sent me to a login page. Because again, it's saying, hey, I can't tell whether or not you're a member of, or you're logged in. So I'm going to send you to the login page and give you the opportunity to log in. By the way, this little screen right here and how this works behind the scenes, we're going to talk about a little bit later. Okay. Now, let me get back to my slides here. And let's go find that slide right there. All right. Now, let's take a standard URL.
That's not pretty.
No. Yeah. so, question. Do you have any idea of what might be on the other end of that? No.
Mm-mm.
How about a search engine? You think a search engine's going to know what that's going to... No. And that's really the problem here, is it's just ugly. That when I go look at that URL, I don't know what that's pointing to. And this is where vanity URLs come into play. And, you know, don't discount vanity URLs. These are extremely important. Because now when I look at this, I know exactly what's going to be on the other end of that URL, that it's going to be disintegration from the artist's cure. Mm-hmm. Done. It tells me that right there. So now the user knows what's going to be displayed, search engines are going to know what's going to be displayed, and it does read that much better. That one of the side projects that that I did in a prior life is a little tiny conference convention for MCTs. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, we want to get people to speak, and since we had no money, we wanted to get them to speak for free. Well, the reason that people will do things like that is because they're trying to build a name for themselves. So having a URL that says www.namctsummit.com/speaker/Christopher Harrison is going to look that much better than having something else that's, you know, just going to be /42 or whatever the ID is going to be. Now, as it turns out, there's two ways that we can set up routing. One way that we can do this, there is my little highlighter, is by going into the route doc config. Another way is attribute routing. Let's do the route doc config first. Let me go into Visual Studio here. And there we go. There we go. Okay. So now, over here, inside of AppStart, is this brand new little file. Well, not brand new. It's been there for a little while, but it's brand new to us. We're going to talk about it now. Mm-hmm. Called route config. And when I open that up, inside of here, I can now set up routing. And I sort of have two problems with this. Problem the first is the syntax here isn't necessarily simple. Problem the second is the fact that this is now inside of a separate file. And we talked about before, you know, we want to try and keep everything self-contained. So if I'm now having to keep this file up to date and another file up to date and another file, it just starts to get away from you very quickly.
Yeah.
You know? So let's figure out a better way to do this. So let me go back over here to my little slides, and let's introduce this really cool concept known as attribute routing. So what I do is I just simply add in my little route right on top of the action. So I can just simply type in whatever text it is that I might want. Mm-hmm. So for example, right now, what we have is we have albums/edit/, and then whatever the number might be. Well, you might decide, you know, I really don't like albums plural. I really like album/edit. Mm-hmm. Or maybe for our details, what I would like is I would like album/, and then just simply the number.
Right.
So this is where going in, setting up our own different routing comes into play, and this is where attribute routing comes into play. Because all I have to do to make that happen is just add in that little update. And then you'll also notice, towards the very end here, you'll notice that little id:int. First of all, on the ID, that's automatically going to be passed into there. And that little part right there, that little int, that's going to say, hey, this only works if you passed in an integer. So what it's going to specifically be looking for is it's going to be looking for the text album, the text edit, and then a number here. And if it sees anything else other than that little rule is not going to apply.
And it'll just skip over and look for another rule that matches.
Exactly. That's okay. Exactly it. On top of that, if you decided, hey, you know what, instead of albums controller, that you'll notice that when I kept going back to the browser, that I was going to albums whack create. Well, the reason that it was albums is because the name of the controller that I created was albums controller. Well, if I want that to now be singular for everything, then what you're going to notice is that I can add in a route prefix there. Okay. So with that, let's go back into Visual Studio here. And I'm going to do two things. Number one is I do need to uncomment that little line. And by the way, that is not inside of the template. That was something that I put in, and I just commented it to make my life a little easier. So just need to uncomment that. And now let's go back into our albums controller. And then let's go to, let's just say index here. And what I'm going to do is I'm just going to add on a brand new route. And let's go ahead and just simply call this all, for example. Mm-hmm. And so now what I'm going to do, you know, I really should have given that a better name. Give me one second. How about albums/all. There we go. A little bit better of a name there. And so now let me say albums and then all. Now, it's not going to display any albums because I don't have any, but what I want you to notice here once it comes up is that it is now giving me this brand new index. And let me just go in and create, always that catch with doing live demos. Yeah, exactly. Where's that authorized? There we go. That was funny. All right. And now let's go back. Give that a second there. Okay. And so now let's go in and say albums and all. There we go. And now let's go in and hit create. And then we'll go ahead and give this a title of disintegration. And let's go ahead and click create. And sure enough, now you're going to notice that it is displaying disintegration. And it's now using that route that I created there. And I could even go in and let's say I click on details here. And you'll notice that it's /details/1. Let me go back and add in another route here. And where's my details? There we go. And let's just go in and say route, and let's say album, whoops, there we go. And let's say album/, and let's say ID, and let's make sure that that's going to be an integer, just like that. Let's go in, do a build. Let's come back over here, hit refresh, chugga, 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 chugga. And, whoops, that's okay. There we go. And now here's what I want you to notice. Let me just click on details now. And what you're going to notice is that now the path here is album/ and then the number.
Yep.
And that's that routing in action for us. And that's pretty cool.
It's very cool. So what's I think some big takeaways from that. One,
yeah,
it's very easy to set that up.
Yep.
And two, in general, I recommend not going nuts with that to start with, like I was saying,
yep,
because it's a lot easier if you go down using the default routing, mm-hmm, you know, that are built in. You can build whatever you want. That said, I would use it within reason.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. Use
but
it.
But it's great that you can customize down to the exact digit, every letter, everything.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. So last little takeaway that I want to mention here is best practices for our controllers. And what I want you to notice is high cohesion, low coupling. And this is, or loose coupling, as it's sometimes known, this is really object design 101. Mm-hmm. And we talked an awful lot in the intro about making sure that things are testable. Well, you know how things are going to be testable? Is if you have operations that are closely related to one another, together, and you have operations that aren't necessarily closely related, that are separate. And one of the biggest things that you want to do is make sure that you limit the amount of dependencies from one part of the system to another part. So one of the big things that we highlighted with our actions was the fact that they're using that data context right inside the controller. And that really winds up being kind of bad code. Because if I want to go back and test that later on, I don't want to test the database. I'm going to have other code to test the database. All I want to do is test the controller. So I want to be able to provide a stunt double that's going to basically stand in the place of that data context. And the only way to do that is by creating some form of a repository, some form of a service. So
that's quite a bit.
That's quite a bit. So a couple of big takeaways that I really want you to get. Number one is right at the outset here, the biggest thing we talked about right at the very beginning is that a controller is a class and an action is a method. And really, if you start there and if you grok that, that's 90% of the battle. Grok, understand. If you understand that, that really is 90% of the battle. And that's probably the biggest hurdle that I see people struggling to try and overcome is they look at that controller and they just see, oh my gosh, won the war. It's a class.
Yeah.
And an action is a method. And that really is it.
Right.
Now, in here, we did see how you could go in and customize that a little bit, how you could add on attributes, how you could change the routes. Mm-hmm. But to distill this down to its simplest part, it's all about that first slide.
Yeah.
All about that first slide.
I want to throw in one thing, and I want to highlight something you pointed out, and that was that, you know, the two best practices on there, and the, you know, the cohesion especially. Look, it's if you're a good rule of thumb that I've heard several people say is if I hit page down, if I'm inside your controller action and I hit page down and I'm still inside that controller action, something's wrong. You want to keep, if your controller action is longer than, you know, one screen, something's wrong. You need to, and really, I try and keep mine to 5, maybe 10 lines of code. If it's more than that, that should be in a service class. It should be somewhere else.
And if you take a look at what like Dino Esposito has done and talked about, he basically just wants one line inside of his controller, and that's it. And it really just kind of goes back to even just good object-oriented development and good development in general, is your methods should never be scrollable, not left to right and not up and down. Don't scroll. If you're having to scroll, it's too long. All right. I need a break.
Yeah, I think probably our viewers do too.
Let's go ahead. Let's take 10 minutes and we'll come on back and we'll take a look at our views.
Great.